Can I just say, I don't like how they measure audio with this negative shit. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
It's just setting you up for failure.
It's a scale of, what, one to negative?
Where do you think they should start at? One?
I have no clue. I don't know. I don't even know what it stands for. I've been working with audio for years.
It's decibels.
Decibels? Fuck off. Yeah.
But how do you have negative ones? Are we like taking sound out of the room?
All right, now I'm testing.
Yeah, answer that one, asshole.
We're not going to do like a stupid intro and say our names or anything like that, right?
Nah.
But we're already going, aren't we?
This is first only. They should know our names. I mean, they may not remember you. It's been a while, but the rest of us, they know.
Is this one first only?
Oh, no. This one's for everybody. That's right.
Okay, good.
We should announce who we are.
Don't say no. Why? Who cares? Won't they figure it out slowly? Jeff? I'll just say your name and then people will know you're Jeff.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm Bernie's friend, Jeff.
I'm Jeff.
So, Jeff, you'll appreciate this. I have had a lot of time to reflect on my career over the past few months. And I've reached one conclusion, basically. And it's inspired by you. I wish I'd done a lot more drugs. Seriously, that's like my one regret looking back is I don't know why. I was watching Wolf of Wall Street. You watch these fucking idiots. Every Scorsese movie is essentially the same thing where you're watching these guys and they're these really cool characters. But then if you look at it, it's like they're robbing people blind. They're like robbing normal everyday citizens. Or in like the case of Goodfellas, they're fucking killing people, real people. And these are true stories. But you give it enough time and it's like, who gives a shit? Nobody cares.
You give it enough time and then Henry Hill becomes a lovable old drunk who you love to hear talk on the radio.
Yeah, then exactly. Then all of a sudden Steve Martin's playing him in My Blue Heaven in a follow-up movie that nobody realizes is connected.
That's a great fucking
true?
Movie.
Is that Henry Hill?
Yeah, Steve Martin's character in My Blue Heaven is Henry Hill.
I didn't know that.
There you go. Fucking, that's it. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see y'all next week.
Although some fucking jackass will clip where we talked about this 8.5 years ago for 2 seconds and how I definitely knew that Steve Martin was playing Henry Hill in My Blue Heaven.
Podcasting for 10 plus years really makes you realize how much you forget shit.
Or maybe just it never registered to begin with.
Yeah. It's just, if anybody recorded 2 to 3 hours of their thoughts every day, they would become a hypocrite within 3 weeks.
I was talking last week about how I'd never used a plunger, but I couldn't verify that. I thought maybe I might have. I didn't want someone to come jumping out and be like, actually, in 2007, Gavin used this plunger. That's the shit I worry about now.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an RTAA with you using a plunger.
And isn't that weird, Gavin, that somebody would know that you were, I'm assuming that when you're using a plunger, you were by yourself, alone in a bathroom. And that someone in the world at one point would know about that. And that
do you think they
you
sell
wouldn't.
Double-ended plunges?
You might have had like a coach, like someone walking
a double-ended plunger is called a stick. I have a question for you, Bernie. It's not plunger related, but you said that you were going down this line of thinking about drugs because you were inspired by me.
Yeah.
Is that because I've lamented not doing more drugs or because you have the impression I've done a lot of drugs?
No, not because you're drunk. Here's the thing is that...
It's true. Once a drunk, always a drunk. That's definitely
like,
true.
There's no way that like over time, the shitty stuff that I've done can be made into like a hit movie or like Leonardo DiCaprio could portray me because I have no excuse for any of the dumb, stupid shit that I've done. I'm just a dumbass or an asshole. Whereas like you have this awesome out because you're an alcoholic where it's like
someone could win an Academy Award doing that.
No, or it's like Gus, it's like somebody could just say, you know, if not using Jeff as an example, even though he completely fits this description, if you
go
do stupid, horrible stuff in your life, and you're like, oh, yeah, I did this stuff, and I stole a bunch of money or whatever. Not that Jeff stole money that I know of. Or did all these horrible things that people are treated them poorly. But I was in a really bad place in my life. I was an alcoholic or I was addicted to drugs. And I've since cleaned myself up. Then I was like, oh, I don't have that. Like, there's nothing I can do to clean myself up.
As long as you say sorry in a really sincere way and say you've cleaned your life up, it's like a free pass for every shitty thing you did before that.
Yeah, but you're giving yourself a hard out. You're making it sound like this is the end now. You could walk out tomorrow and kill someone if you wanted to and then recover from that.
Or dude, what are you, 46 years old, Bernie?
47.
Why don't you 47? Why don't you start doing drugs?
That's my
what's
plan.
Stopping you?
Seriously, here's my problem is that I wish I had started younger. Shout out to all the younger kids, do drugs. Your body can take it. My body cannot take it, I don't think, at this point.
Well, just try it. Just microdose. Just little by little. You build it up, and then but next thing you know, it's second nature to you.
I tell you what, when I retire, it's going to be like 100% in the retirement home, video games and hard drugs. Like everything I never did. Why not?
What's the first one?
How is it different from home?
How is it different than quarantine?
What's number one on your wish list?
It's always the one, everyone has a drug they're scared of. For me, it was always LSD. I never wanted to put myself at the mercy of my own imagination, essentially.
Would you say that LSD would be the drug you're most scared of trying?
Definitely. That's what I'm saying. I think everyone has a drug that's like, there's no way they would ever do that particular drug. And for me, it's LSD.
How about you, Gavin, then Gus?
I don't know enough about the drugs. I don't know what they will do.
The drugs.
You watch TV.
It's heroin. There's no question about it.
And Gus is right. Ding, ding, ding. It's definitely heroin.
I feel like I've had heroin, though.
Go on.
Just if I'm looking back across my life, it seems like... I mean, I've had like a tooth pulled, right? And then they give you...
You've had heroin. The dentist prescribed it?
Yeah. I got a colonoscopy. I finally convinced my doctor to put something up my butt. Jeff, I want to talk to you because they were not going to do it. I had to pay out of pocket for it and everything because I wasn't 50 years old yet. And they really don't want you to do it till you're 55.
Yeah, that's changed. When I was in my 30s, because I had a colonoscopy when I was like, I want to say 36, right? Because of the diverticulitis. They were like, you're going to have one at 40 and then 45 and then 50 and then every 5 years for the rest of your life. And then I go back to get them and they're like, nah, you don't need one at 40. Come back at 45. And so I haven't had one in 9 years. I'm supposed to have one this summer. Not sure how that's going to shake out. But yeah, I guess the rules are changing because I remember it was like, it was all get one at 40. And then I swear people were saying 45. And now my doctor said 50 or 55.
Is there like other ways that they're checking? Like, is there something else supplementing it that's replaced that or what?
That's a great question.
I think they just have probably enough data to realize like, unless you've got some reason to get it. Like, I think diverticulitis is one of the conditions that would necessitate it.
And according to them, it's not like even with my diverticulitis, that's not that big a deal. Because I tried at 40 and he told me no.
And I went in because I have a history of it in my family. And I always heard what Jeff heard, which is like, you're supposed to start getting them by the time you're 40. So yeah.
Can you have just lied your way into it? Just say you got a butt plug stuck or something and then have them check up there?
They don't schedule a procedure for a month out and make you spend 3 days doing prep to pull a fucking butt plug out of your asshole, dude. That's an emergency room visit.
I think it's always a bad idea to lie about medical stuff too. That's the one person you never want to lie to.
Like, he's especially gonna be
like going back to the drug conversation. Tell the doctor what drugs you took. If they're not asking you to get you in trouble, if you end up in the emergency room and you did take something, tell the fucking doctor because they're not asking you so they can rat you out to the cops. That's not
so. Are you saying you got the butt plug out?
On my own. On my own, I got the butt plug out.
Yeah, did they find anything up there? How did it go?
They didn't find anything, so I got a clean bill of health, which, Gus, as you know, is one of the worst things a doctor can tell you, because then it just reaffirms all your fucking bad choices.
Yeah, now you're talking about doing drugs.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, is that I went in, and I've never been knocked out in my life. I have, like, periods where I've blacked out, either don't remember stuff from alcohol, or there was one time I got punched where I don't remember stuff. But as far as I know, I've never, like, lost consciousness and passed out, including being, like, wisdom teeth or knocked out medically. So they could have done that for this. And I said, no, just give me the, you know, like Twilight or whatever they call it. And that was such a strange experience because I never had that before either, where it's like, I don't recall ever not being lucid at any point in time, but there's literally 40 minutes that seems like it's a minute long to me. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't gather any information or make any memories or something, this really weird gap, but I don't feel like a gap. Like I don't feel like I was asleep or anything like that.
Did you order a barbecue chicken pizza?
No, I did not. I didn't. And I didn't record any dumb internet videos either with me just yammering away or anything like that. No offense, Gavin. I know you recorded one of those videos yourself.
You know, it's funny because I had morphine in high school when I had my jaw surgery, and I think I spent probably from 17 until 30 trying to figure out how to hurt myself again in a way to get morphine. Like, I attribute a lot of my dumb shenanigans to just wanting to hurt myself in a way that I could get, like, a month supply of morphine again, like, because it was so awful.
Don't they just pass that out to everyone in the army? Didn't you get that while you were there?
You said war.
Oh. The little, like, stabby morphine pen?
I'm gonna lay in a secret. In the army, they prescribe ibuprofen, 800 milligram ibuprofen for everything. I got the flu, 1600 milligrams of ibuprofen. Broke your leg, 1600 milligrams of ibuprofen. Got a dildo stuck up your ass, 800 milligrams of ibuprofen.
But you were also like huffing gas. Was that after you couldn't get hold of any morphine?
That was younger, wasn't it?
I was about the same age, yeah. I was chasing that high. Dude, I huffed gas out of extreme boredom.
Have you retained the skills you had from the job, Jeff? Can you work on like two-cycle engines and things like that, like small engines?
I can empty gas out of a lawnmower like a pro still to this day. That's like riding a bike.
With your hands tied behind your back?
Yeah, with only my nose available. I think those skills have probably atrophied in my old age.
Gab was bitching on Twitter the other day about leaf blowers, that he hates leaf blowers.
Well, the worst thing ever invented.
Why? Because are they waking you up in the morning?
They're waking
and stuff?
Me up. They're loud, pollute, and they just blow leaves around.
So I looked it up because I had read a story about this on Reddit. After you posted that, I was going to link it to you, and then I realized Gavin doesn't want anyone to respond to him on Twitter ever for any reason. So I didn't even send it. I just read up on it. And it goes back to something Gus, you and I have always talked about with climate change. And, by the way, I've heard you're a vegan now, Gus, and I gotta talk about that. I don't know where the fuck that came from.
It came from the earth.
It's like veganism or veganism, or when people talk about stuff they want to do environmentally, like, oh, I'm doing X, like I have an electric car or whatever, and people immediately attack you for doing whatever you're doing because they're not going to do it. It's like, no one's asking you to do it. All I'm saying is that I'm doing this. And there was some guy on Reddit who posted about... he informed the people in his town, and I think it was Canada, that leaf blowers pollute as much as a pickup truck, that they throw out an incredible amount of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide into the environment from running, just because they're a two-cycle engine. They're just spitting oil essentially out with their exhaust and burning oil. And he just made people aware of that, and he's had to deal with like getting constant death threats. Because people would rather threaten his life than evaluate their own need to use a leaf blower to rake leaves.
Do you think these are people who just bought one?
If I remember the exact stat, I think running one for 30 minutes puts out as much emissions as driving a pickup truck from Texas to Alaska.
I think that was said in that post. You might have read the same post that I did.
Probably.
But what fucking believe it?
Truck? A 1913 Model T.
What if I stick wheels to a leaf blower and ride that to a different city?
You get to Alaska in 30 minutes.
I mean, there's a big difference between a 19... What was that truck you had? A 68?
It was a 64.
64 Chevy, Chevy and a like a 2020 F-150. They're very, very different on the emissions, I would assume. This is it. BC Man. This is... I'll put it in the link dump. Prince George Matters. Who knows if this is a good website. Environmental enthusiast... that informed Vancouver City Council to reconsider introducing a bylaw to ban the use of gas-powered leaf blowers throughout the city, and he received death threats. I mean, why would you? I mean, how dedicated are you to your leaf blower that you want to threaten somebody's life? It's unfucking believable. So, guys, have you got any death threats for being a vegan?
The one I got, kind of similar to what you're talking about, is earlier this year, I posted on Twitter a breakdown of the amount of electricity I used to charge my car for all of 2019.
I believe it's your pinned tweet.
It is my pinned tweet. And I got so many comments coming after me telling me how much worse electric cars are for the environment than gasoline-powered cars. And all I could say is, I'm not saying that it's better. I'm just trying to answer. People always ask, how much does it cost to charge? All I'm trying to tell you is how much it cost me to charge.
Just data.
Right. It's just data. You're the one who's interpreting it and twisting it to be this other narrative or to try to make some kind of other point with it. I'm just trying to tell you how much does it cost to go. That's
it. What do we need? Do we need hydrogen cars? Is that the future?
No. No.
What do we need, Gus?
We just need to clean up infrastructure and power plants. So it's like, if everyone switched to an electric car, that would be preferable. Obviously, power plants are still dirty. You need to decommission old coal plants and find more cleaner ways to generate electricity, which unfortunately might include nuclear, which is probably something people don't want to deal with. All right, there you go. I killed it. Thanks, big, thanks for listening, everybody.
Big milestone for Germany. They did something like 30% of their electricity was from solar on one of these days. I love those milestones. We seem like we hit them every now and then. Like some country is at 80% of their total energy is made by renewables.
Yeah, I think England's had a few days last year where there was no finite resources burned.
On the other hand, I read this morning in the New York Times that the EPA is weakening controls on mercury emissions for coal-fired power plants in the United States.
Didn't they suspend all the EPA stuff because of Corona? Like, they've done that in the UK as well.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. They suspended environmental protections just for no justifiable reason, really. Just like, oh, we're just suspending all these because of the coronavirus.
I saw an interesting infographic, I think it was last week, that broke down the air quality index over Los Angeles between 1995 and current day, just to show how the impact of less people driving and like everything kind of shutting down because of coronavirus has kind of cleaned up the air there. But the most interesting part of that graph to me was to look at how much dirtier the air was in 1995. Like, way worse. And it's, you know, you think of that as being, and it's still a super dirty city, very polluted air quality wise, but it's crazy how much worse it was 25 years ago. And to see that, you know, tightening emission standards really does help and actually did do something there. But fuck it. Whatever.
Well, they've been loosened now, right? Didn't the Trump administration do that last year? And they're not going to sue California to make them, because California said we're going to adhere to our own emission standards.
I think that's still ongoing.
And isn't that a big part of the conversation now, Jeff, is that I think it's from the outside looking in, especially America seems like one gigantic unit, but it really is the United States of America. And when we hear about things within the U.S. of like something that's going on in Michigan, like people flying Confederate flags in Michigan for some reason, or blocking, now having a protest where they block the hospitals to protest the quarantine. It's like when I hear that, I don't feel that strong of an association with those people living in Texas. I don't feel as much responsibility as I think most people outside of the U.S. looking in would just see us all as Americans. Like, I feel like there's a greater degree of discrepancy for us to see, like, what state is what. Like, California is a very, very different state than Florida, for instance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think the rest of the world understands how ununited we are in the States, I guess. Like, the reason I don't live in Alabama is because it's a steaming pile of shit full of shitty, racist, gross people. We're still American. They're still Americans down there, including all my family, who I love dearly. Shout out. Love you, Mom. But everybody around them is terrible.
And it's like huge discrepancies in things like literacy, in maybe not infant mortality, but enough to be important. You know, there's huge differences in states.
Oh, it's ridiculous. When I moved around a lot. I think I've told this story a few times, maybe. But what is this podcast for not retelling stories from the last decade? When I was in like the sixth grade in Louisiana, which was like 30th in the nation in school systems, and then I had to move back to Alabama, my eighth grade history book was my sixth grade history book in Louisiana.
Wow.
Yeah. Because Alabama at the time was 47th in the nation. I believe they might even be 48th now. But I remember even at 14 or 13 going like, this does not seem right.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. And even within Texas, I mean, Austin is so different than everywhere else. We dodged a huge bullet. I don't even know if we dodged a bullet. Somebody made a huge gut check, tough call of canceling South by Southwest in the middle of March, which is the biggest economic event in Austin, Texas, bar none.
Like $150 million a year it brings in or something to the local economy?
Yeah. For a local economy, it's got to be higher than $150 million, I would assume. But it's bigger. We have an F1 track here and everything. Nothing compares to South by Southwest. They canceled the festival, the film festival, the interactive festival, which is basically the tech festival, and the music festival, which is dwarfs everything. And they did that when we had zero cases in the city of Austin, essentially Travis County in Texas. And I think that's what woke, I think, a lot of people up in the nation, was the fact that South by Southwest had been canceled. It became one of the first talking points for action in the U.S. And Yeah, if we hadn't done that, if they or the city hadn't done that, I really think we'd be one of the big hotspots in the nation.
Oh, I totally agree. And for people who aren't super familiar with South By, it's a 2-week festival, music interactive and film, like Bernie said. But about 250 to 300,000 people come into the town in the span of about 12 days.
So I just looked it up just to back up what you were saying. And the 2019 economic impact was about $356 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christ.
Almost $500 million are creeping up that way. To put it in perspective, too, I think a lot of people who know about Austin know about 6th Street, which is kind of like our Bourbon Street. It's just a row of bars that extends for like a mile and a half. And the day after they canceled South by Southwest, they started boarding up the bars on 6th Street. And have you guys seen that? If you go down 6th Street, everything is just boarded up.
As a matter of fact, not only when they started boarding it up, they also mentioned that they wouldn't be shutting, because they shut down 6th Street every night, every like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, from like 8 p.m. until 3 a.m. or whatever. And they the other night when they did that, they announced, I guess it was about a month ago now, right, Gus? They announced that it wouldn't be shut down for the first time in like 22 years.
So I think the last time it was 99.
99. I immediately drove down it just to see what it was like to drive down 6th Street on a Friday night. It was crazy. It was surreal. It looked like a city boarding up for a hurricane.
Right. Were there any people out and about?
No, not that night. But I will say, recently, about maybe two, three weeks ago, because while we're social distancing and we have a shelter in place order or our version of it, we're still allowed to go out and go for walks and go for bike rides to get exercise. And I don't live too terribly far from downtown. So I rode my bike, or Emily and I rode our bikes down at like 11 a.m. on a Saturday just to see what downtown was like. Downtown is crazy because it's empty except for the homeless people that were already there, but now there's no normal people around either, and it's like
go ahead just a choice of normal people.
Did I say normal? Sorry.
There's homeless people, but there's no humans.
No, homeless people are humans. As far as I know, I can feel myself getting in trouble here, but I'm just saying, like, there are a lot of aggressive I lived downtown for 2 years. There's a lot of aggressive, like mentally unstable homeless people because we don't do a good job of taking care of them here in the city. And a downtown that's just those people is the scariest place on earth. I got the fuck out of downtown very quickly.
Yeah, and can you imagine what a horror story it would be to be homeless with this disease going around? It's like, what can you possibly do? You already don't have access to care.
You don't have access to cleanliness. Like, what do you? Yeah, how do you?
And
how do you?
The national message is stay at home, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, stay away from other people and wash your hands obsessively 400 times a day. How do you do that if you're living on the streets? It's heartbreaking.
That being said, I was making fun of you for saying normal people. Obviously, normal can also mean just within the bounds of a certain statistical range, you know.
Yeah.
And homeless people definitely fall outside of that. And then there's the realistic nature that a lot of homeless people are mentally ill. Like, I keep reading in all of these cities, one of the big initiatives they're taking is to take hotels, which are shut down, and they're turning into rooms where they give them to homeless people. And it's like, I can't everyone see how that's going to go really, really terribly wrong for those hotels?
There was a hotel in South Austin, I want to say like off of 35 in Old Torf, that burned down, was it like 10 years ago because of something similar? Do you remember that? Someone started a fire in one of the rooms and the whole hotel went up.
Jesus. There's going to be a lot of choices made that won't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. There are choices that are going to be made inside of those hotel rooms.
I'm looking right now. I'm watching while we're doing this. I'm watching. There's a group of protesters downtown Austin right now outside the governor's mansion rallying to reopen the state.
Oh, please don't.
It's a 5-hour long rally today from noon to 5 p.m.
Well, I think that's a territory that we're in now, though, too, because with the lockdown measures, if and when they start to work and you start to see that flattening of the curve, you start to see new cases dropping off, you see the death rate start to flatten, and you know that horrible exponential rise of dying people doesn't happen, then no one's, or very few people are going to be saying, oh, we took the right steps. So many people are going to be saying, like, that was overblown.
Right.
And we shouldn't have done it.
Right.
I'm actually curious how the administration is now going to pivot from saying it wasn't a big deal to now it is a big deal and they've been saying it was all along to, if we do end up somewhere below a flu in terms of death rates, how are they going to pivot back to saying that
we told you
all along? Yeah, exactly. We told you all along, right? Because you know that's coming.
It's a real shame that we're so politically and divided in the country, because I've been thinking about this a lot. There's no way to have gotten this right in our political climate.
No, well, there's no way to get it right. It's just at all. I mean, it's like the disease comes out of nowhere, and it's like even in the midst of it spreading, people in the U.S. of course want to fight with each other, make it somehow political. I'm dealing with that on a personal level because you know, I got kids that go back and forth, and my ex-wife and I differ very. We're very different on the political spectrum. Let's put it that way. But also in this case, it's like neither one of us is like super on the fringe of being lunatics. But I definitely like lean more towards the preparation. A pandemic is coming. This is a real deal side. And she's like seeing the economic impacts, which admittedly are the economic impacts are greater than the death toll in the U.S. Yeah. So far.
What is it? 22 million unemployed? Is that the new number that just came out?
Austin is 25% unemployment. That is Great Depression levels, man.
Yeah.
God. And the scary thing to me about it is we're seeing a lot of things that we'll study, I think, for a long time as a result of COVID. One we already mentioned, which is you could never convince cities all over the world to shut down to test the environmental impacts of no one commuting and everyone working from home. But it is a huge byproduct of all the measures we're taking to prevent the spread of the disease. So now we're going to have all this climate data, I think, that we can use to affect change in other ways. So that's a silver lining thing. But
yeah, this blip will show up on so many graphs that are nothing to do with coronavirus.
Yeah. And it's also going to be hard to get people to go back to work in an office if they don't have to. You know, I think people miss traffic right now, but once you're in it two or three more times, you're like, why do they come back to this?
Yeah, it's I wonder if maybe people don't. Like maybe we maybe this fundamentally changes the way we work. I mean, Rooster Teeth as a, you know, about a 350 to 400 person company has been able to make a transition to working from home, I think, fairly successfully. It's been a lot of work and a lot of heavy lifting from a lot of really hardworking, talented people, but it can be done, you know? And it makes me wonder, do we all need to go crowd around in offices together 5 days a week? Or maybe we start to work from home more often or with certain positions. I don't know.
I mean, eventually the work ethic has to decrease, right? As people get more complacent and lazy. I feel like an office will still be important for coming up with new shit.
It's funny you say that. I was thinking about my desk earlier. When I was looking out the window, I was looking at my backyard and I was looking outside and I was wondering, what does my desk look like right now? Like, well, you know, it's been weeks since I've seen it. Like, what did I leave on it? What's there? You know, just like wistfully remembering my time sitting at my desk in my office instead of my makeshift work area here at home.
Yeah, we get a lot of packages sent from people, you know, and I was thinking the other day, I hope I didn't leave any packages in my office that were full of fucking perishable food somebody sent me. Unseal that tomb 6 weeks later and fucking, it'd be like the day we got that somebody mailed us that Lampas bread in that box they created that molded and we had to fumigate the office.
Your office is going to be taken over by mold and ants, so have fun with that.
Well, Gus, you
made cleaner than a Chima Hunter.
Fun of me for my Lampas bread that I had my marine rations, but those are a special place in my house right now, sitting on the shelf.
It's been surprisingly easier than I expected to be eating a plant-based diet with all of this stuff going on. I went through about a week where it was difficult to find the brand of tofu I prefer, but beyond that, it's been really not bad, which is shocking to me.
Okay, three big changes from COVID. One is the pollution. Second is the economy. Third is Gus has a preferred brand of tofu, apparently. The world has completely changed on me entirely. But I do think another thing we're about to learn from all of this, and it's going to be a very hard lesson, is that there is an incredible momentum to capitalism. And while this was a huge effort to stop that momentum and wind it down, it's not going to be as easy to wind it back up again. Like, Jeff, even what you just said about we're all working from home. We don't need these places. We don't need these offices. You know, I am not in management at Rooster Teeth anymore and haven't been for a long time. There's a number of people that work just with us whose jobs it is to maintain those spaces and to make sure that the people who do other things can be there. So I can think of like five or six people that if that change happens on a global scale, I can think of people that's going to impact in my immediate life, you know? So these big changes, you know, sometimes they're, you know, there's a silver lining to them coming a little bit quicker, but then also it's going to affect some people in the immediate short term.
It makes me wonder if when this country was coming up and if there was this infrastructure here already, like internet. I wonder how many buildings wouldn't have been built, like office buildings.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, right? Like, what's going to happen to real estate, commercial real estate?
I was also thinking, like, what happens if your company is deemed, you know, necessary to keep operating, but every other company in your building isn't? Are you just, is the giant building owner just paying for your business to be in there? Do they turn off all the other offices and shit? Like, how does that work?
Well, I think we're reaching a period where we're going to start to see those kinds of things, Gav, because, I mean, like, I've done on my own small economic level, on a micro level, like, new babies, babysitter, we have a guy that works on our lawn. I've just been paying them. Even though they can't come, I just continue to pay them. And I think that, like, on a macro level, we're seeing that with, like, rents and leases. But that's only going to last so long. I mean, it's sure some businesses are continuing to pay their rent if they can. But as they don't have any revenue, they're just not going to be able to do that. And likewise, you know, people who own real estate and lease it out to people are going to run out of runway as well, you know? And it's going to take the government, like, especially in Austin, reducing property tax and things like that in order to make sure that that's stable.
Well, don't worry. I mean, the federal government sent most people $1,200 and, you know, you can live for 10 months off of that.
Yeah, I know, right? $1,200, man.
What was interesting was that people who make $95,000 get $200.
Is that it? $200? I thought it was nothing.
I think above 99 is nothing, but 95.
Yeah, there's a scale.
It's like, what's someone who makes $95,000 going to do with $200? Just give it all to, like, give that shit down to the people who make way less
make
than that.
Make $94,000. Yeah.
It just seemed like an arbitrary amount of money.
Yeah, like, why did they sit down and come up with those tiers? That's weird.
Can I just say real fast, before we go too far down this podcast, I don't hate homeless people or people from Alabama. I really don't. And I don't think homeless people aren't normal.
But you are pro-heroin.
Yeah, don't worry. They're not going to get podcasts in Alabama for another 10 years. You're fine.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
I get the feeling like most congressional bills, like when they determine these things, a lot of them are almost like when they decide what's canonical for the Bible and what to include and what not to include, there's stuff that gets so specific. It makes me think it has to be about one guy. Like when they were including this one verse in the Bible, it has to be about one specific person in their town, and it just ended up stuck in the Bible forever. I always think back, there's a Deuteronomy verse. I looked it up here. It's Deuteronomy 23:1, and it says, "No one whose testicles are crushed shall enter the assembly of the Lord." And it's like, what is that rule? Like, if you have crushed testicles, you can't go to church. So that was included because there was one guy in town who had busted balls and they knew they could pick him out for this one thing, right? That's what that had to be.
It's funny you say that because I always think about there's that one verse about like, don't spill your seed on the ground or God will kill you. It's like there was a dude who was jacking off on the ground and they were just trying to get him to stop.
It's the exact. It'd be like. It would be like if you read the Bible and it's like, and Mark said to Paul, "Do not masturbate with the right hand, or it will grow hair." It's like this is shit your mom told you when you're furiously beating off as an 8-year-old that somebody thought, "Yeah, we'll throw that in the Bible."
The 11th commandment was, "And chicks named Sheila are real cunts."
If you hold your face that long, it will stick.
But how many times do you have to spill your seed on the ground before it's committed to writing? Like, it wouldn't be written up the first time.
I tell you what, go jack off outside in front of a cop and see how long it gets committed, how long until it's committed to writing.
Just don't do it in downtown Austin right now because it'll be normal behavior. You'll be okay.
Yeah, nobody will notice.
Well, that's the other thing we're dealing with, too, in Austin is... We're dealing with the fact that we do have shelter in place and, you know, stay home, stay safe. But they've openly said they're not going to enforce it. So it's really just up to everybody to honor this. And I live really close in Austin. I'm not going to say where, but I live next to a park that gets a lot of traffic. And I can tell you, the traffic in that park has not died down at all. There's like... It's really frustrating for me because it's been hard to navigate with having kids and my poor JD, the last half of his senior year has just evaporated. You know, rug got pulled out from under him. No graduation, no prom. He pointed out the other day he didn't get to say goodbye to any of his friends because they didn't know they weren't coming back from spring break.
Yeah.
It's like high school is, he doesn't have that closure for high school that the rest of us kind of take for granted, whether or not we liked high school. But yeah, there's 10 to 15% of the population, it seems like, that is having a fucking ball, dude.
Are you yelling at him? Are you screaming at him?
I thought about flying my drone over there. Or I thought about doing like, I was telling Jeff I was going to do like World War II style propaganda on a loudspeaker. Like, you know, the capital is kaput. Go home. But yeah, no, it's the parking lot's filled with cars, and I just hear people screaming and have like, you know, that scream that kids do when they're in a group and they're running back and forth screaming at the top of their lungs. It's just kids playing together and just families out having a ball because the city's got no traffic and everything is empty. And how cool is this? You know, there's going to be people who actually miss Austin under lockdown when all the quote people come back.
It's funny. I've been, every now and then, like every couple of days, I'll get stir crazy. And, you know, rather than go for a walk or do anything, I'll get in my car and I'll just drive around. I'll be like, oh, I haven't driven to this part of town in a while. And or this place is normally really far. Like I drove out to the Oasis the other day because I was like, normally it's a pain in the ass, but there's no traffic these days. But I was driving down 35 the other day, and it made me think about what traffic was like back in the 90s in Austin, back you know, before the population doubled. And it's like, the streets kind of used to be like this. It just crept up for over so many years. I didn't realize it was like, this is what it used to be like driving around.
We used to be able to go downtown on a, not to be the old people, but we used to be able to go downtown on a Friday night, Gus, you and I, and park in front of the bar we went to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to think of now. Now you don't go downtown because you don't want to deal with parking, or you Uber because it's impossible.
Or remember, like, we used to go bowling all the time, that bowling alley that was up off of Runberg. We were living off of Riverside, and it'd be like, yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll go. It'll take us like 6 minutes to get there.
Yeah, it's the other side of town. It's 5 minutes.
Right. It's like, oh, yeah, it's no big deal. Now I'd be like, oh, fuck, it's like a half hour away. I'm not going all the way over there.
Speaking of what Bernie said about people being outside, though, it is weird that, like, I live in a big neighborhood, like a big like family neighborhood, I guess. A lot of kids, a lot of like fucking swings in the front yard and shit. And I never see kids outside. Kids are inside on their Wiis or their Switches or their Xboxes or whatever, or their fucking iPhones. And something about telling kids you don't have to go to school and you have to stay home has made them all want to ride bikes and go outside and play street hockey. And it's like, it's insane. It's like parting the seas when I have to drive out of my neighborhood to go to the grocery store. It's like block party every block.
I know exactly what you mean. It's JD just turned. He also had his 18th birthday under lockdown, you know, so it was, yeah, it's like a whole thing, you know. And obviously there's bigger problems in the world than high school graduation and things like that. But it's just something in my personal life where it's like, it just kind of sucks to watch him not have those things, you know. And
totally.
Yeah, it's like, all JD's friends, it seems like in the first weeks especially, were like, hey, let's all throw parties and let's all go do this stuff. The stuff that, you know, maybe I just didn't notice it, but it seemed like it ramped up significantly when the orders came down to say, hey, maybe you should stay at home. Everyone's like, nah, maybe we shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. It's that American fuck you attitude that we have that's ingrained in us.
Dude, that's only going to get stronger, right? We're starting to see people are just like, at first, there was some level of solidarity. I think the last time there was solidarity in this country was probably after 9/11. And I hadn't seen anything like that in my lifetime. You know, that amount of like everyone's going in the same direction. And it actually got a little scary at times. But this lasted probably 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks of people like paying attention. Now everyone's just like back to politics as usual.
I wonder if the people who are heeding to the stay at home and doing it all correctly, I wonder if that is driven by the end being in sight, though. Like, if there wasn't promises of a vaccine in 18 months or whatever, and if it was going to be like 20 years, I reckon it would be so different.
You think that's still in sight? You think that like,
I don't. Yeah.
Being doing this for 18 months is like, oh yeah, no big deal.
It's a lot better than 20 years.
I mean, yeah, comparatively, it's also a lot better than dying, but I wouldn't say it's in sight.
Yeah, I don't think it's in sight either.
Well, I think it'd be different if it was 20.
Okay, point given.
It'd probably even more different if it was 100.
Yeah,
well, sure.
They've
or
said,
200 or 1,000. What else would it be different?
That like live events and conventions again won't come back till fall of 2021 at this point.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm not in management anymore. I don't know anything. People keep writing to me about live events and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know anything about it. But it's, you know, it's who knows how long it's going to last. The other thing that we're dealing with JD as well is that he's off to university next year. And now if his first year at university is all going to be distance learning and teleconferencing, he just might not want to go for the first year of college and just, you know, travel for a year. If he can travel, you know, or anything.
So
it's, yeah.
So, take a gap year, play some video games.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. Let's say we, as a country or as a society, we follow protocol enough that everybody's like, a healthy person's fears are assuaged, and we start to open up travel again. How long until you feel comfortable getting on a flight or an international flight? Like, I was watching an episode of Making the Cut last night, which is it's like the new Project Runway. And they went to Tokyo, and I was like, man, I want to fucking go to Tokyo. I love Tokyo. And then I was thinking, will I go to Tokyo again?
Right.
Like, when would I feel safe going anywhere?
Once I get the vaccine. Once you get the vaccine, that's it.
Well, yeah, I'm saying you probably won't feel safe, though. You probably will go to Tokyo, but I do think fundamentally, at least for probably 5 or 6 years, you're... mental approach to that will be very, very different, I think.
And you know? and this next time you go, you won't think it's unusual that people are wearing masks. You'll probably be wearing one too.
I also think that is going to be a major foundational change in society in general, is that masks are going to become permanently prevalent, and it will not be weird to see people in America wearing masks, and you won't make fun of them or think that they're, you know, like Looney Tunes or have some sort of a weird immune deficiency or whatever.
Well, and this is where I get a little bit off the rails, and I'm probably gonna upset some people by saying this. It also doesn't help that we have the CDC and the Surgeon General in the US giving such wildly conflicting advice on how to approach masks and the efficacy of masks. It's something I've been very upset about through this whole process. I was actually traveling internationally with my new baby, who was 4 months old at the time. I was traveling internationally right around my birthday, which is January 18th. I was traveling on the 15th of January. And that was right at the time they locked down Wuhan. It was a city of 10 million people. And I, as anyone who's listened to the podcast knows, I've always been like, had my eye on pandemics and looking at this kind of thing. We went over my whole preparation kit that I have going back to the Ebola days when Ebola was in Dallas. And, so I've been watching this stuff very, very closely, because I went through London Heathrow the day after they locked down Wuhan. And I mean, we were, you know, had masks on at that point in time. And I get why the CDC, it's my own personal opinion here, I get why the CDC is saying the things that they are, because there's obviously a shortage of PPE equipment in the United States, masks included. But at what point does... like a white lie, and we all know the result they're trying to achieve of getting the masks in the hands of healthcare professionals where they will be the most effective. At what point is that detrimental to tell people that masks are not effective? Because I don't know in what world breathing freely in a public space where people are infected is somehow on par with having any kind of covering over your mouth in any way whatsoever. You know, I get with kids, because you put a mask on a little kid, they touch their face a lot more. That can reduce the efficacy of it. But even like in the early days, I was on the China flu subreddit back in January, which is now, they did a weird thing on the subreddits where they switched subreddits. There was a China flu subreddit.
It's called the China flu subreddit?
Well, nobody knew what it was.
Right.
They didn't even know it was a coronavirus at the time. It was just some flu-like disease. Remember the early days of even AIDS, Jeff, when they called it the gay flu? Because they didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And so the subreddit, they actually went through a really interesting thing where once it was called the coronavirus and it started to become more in the public eye, the people who were on the China flu subreddit were actually there from the very beginning and were discussing all of this stuff, and they switched subreddits. They made one day they made a full switch, almost like Sweden switching sides of the roads that they drive on when they did that, where they said, do y'all hear music?
No.
No.
Why would they say that?
Hold on. All of a sudden I just started hearing music here. Hold on. Oh, you know what it is?
He goes crazy.
Sorry. No, I'm going crazy. I had a news tab open and it just, I guess, changed over to an ad or something for a link I was looking at. But they did a switch in one night where the China flu subreddit and the coronavirus subreddit, which started later once they knew it was a coronavirus, more people were going to that, but that was an unmoderated subreddit. So one day they just flopped and they said, okay, now if you want to have an unmoderated discussion about China flu and scream about China and say horrible things, you know, about Bat Soup or whatever, that's that subreddit China Flu. And now we're moving over to the moderated discussion, which is just information about coronavirus. But one of the early changes, the moderators, and they were really great moderators in the early days on that official subreddit, was that they banned all discussion of masks because it just got to be fucking insane of people saying whether or not masks were effective. And I'm not saying that masks will stop the coronavirus. I don't feel that way. But how can you argue that they're less effective than not having them? You know what I mean? It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
So that's when China Flu became available for the president to use after that.
Yeah, China Flu. Does that bother you, by the way? It doesn't. This might not be popular. That doesn't bother me that he calls it that.
It bothers me. We have a name. He was using the preferred name, and he switched almost intentionally to defer blame. It's like trying to remind people that it's not his fault. It's the spirit behind it.
Yes, but also China is doing that as well.
Just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean that we should do it as well.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
No, I get what you're saying, but it. And when Trump does it, does seem to have a harder edge to it. But when a Chinese
when
official
Trump does
on Twitter,
he's signaling racism to people that are listening for that racism.
The origin of the name, right? Like people will say, what about, look back at the Spanish flu. We called it that to try to make it seem like it was someone else's problem. It's like, it's all about a perception, right? We had it. It probably started here with a Spanish flu. And we call it Spanish flu just because of information censorship at the time in World War I.
Yeah.
Right. It was actually one of the earliest kind of media byproducts of the modern media environment where Spain was the only people reporting on the flu. Everyone else involved with the war was being hush-hush about it. So the only reports in newspapers were in Spain. So it was called the Spanish flu because that's where all the cases supposedly were. But let me see this. There was a Chinese official who was on Twitter, which is a banned platform in China. It's a banned platform. Supposedly that no one in China can get onto Twitter, supposedly. And he was on there saying openly that the paramilitary games were held in Wuhan in November and that the U.S. brought the coronavirus to China as part of the paramilitary games. And it was actually military personnel from the U.S. who were infected first in China. He was openly saying this. And he's actually backtracked on it, which is pretty rare. But it's like, it's... And Trump's not... I don't think Trump is saying the Chinese virus because he's trying to solve this problem long-term. But long-term, we do have a huge fucking problem with the propaganda engine that exists in China. And this is... I think this... What we're dealing with, the coronavirus, is a huge offshoot of that. It's not the main reason, but it's our response to it, I think, has been the downplaying of the virus when it was exclusively in China for a while.
No, that's true. I'll agree with that.
That's for sure. And before we had to deal with the coronavirus, everybody was up in arms about censorship in film and the NBA and television in China. That was the last big controversy. This just eclipsed that.
Yeah, and there's Western versions of that. Not that Japan is a Western country, but they're a little bit more democratic. You see, for capitalistic reasons, why people downplayed as well. I was like, even back in January, I thought the big watershed moment for this virus was going to be if and when the Olympics were canceled or postponed. That was what was going to bring everyone's attention to it. That was actually one of the last things to happen. Japan just stuck to their guns that they were holding those Olympics, man.
Well, that might have been out of their control. That might have been IOC as well. I won't put the blame entirely on them.
Yeah, but Gus, who were these organizations? Who's the IOC? Who's FIFA? Who's the World Health Organization? It's like there's all this debate about these. If you have these organizations and they held so much power, why can they not effectively do anything either?
Yeah.
The World Health Organization, going back to the whole calling it the China Flu subreddit, the reason why it was called the China Flu subreddit for so long was they wouldn't release information about the virus. They wouldn't identify it. They finally identified it as coronavirus. But then even after they identified it as a coronavirus, it took them weeks to name the thing COVID-19. And it's part of the reason why I think you still see people calling it corona and not calling it COVID is because they had to go through this whole process of naming it that didn't tie it to a region, and it didn't have any specifications of origin and things like that. While at the same time, the last outbreak of essentially a SARS-related epidemic was called the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. It was called MERS. Mm-hmm. So it's not a very consistent methodology they have for naming this, but apparently not calling it the Wuhan flu or the Wuhan virus was very, very important to the World Health Organization.
Hmm.
It's frustrating. It's been frustrating watching that organization because even though on the podcast I make a lot of jokes about NASA and stuff like that, I do – I consider myself to be a very scientific person. I hold science in very high regard. And it sucks when so many of these organizations that have such huge scientific impact or public health impact, they're essentially appointed willy-nilly, it seems like, by politicians. They're really just politicians who happen to have a background in medicine, which I think that's something that's gotta fucking change. Right.
Which is sometimes a tenuous background at best.
Right. Like this Navy dude, Jeff, how do you feel about this Navy guy, the Secretary of the Navy, getting on the fucking PA system on the Roosevelt and lambasting the captain?
He got everything that he fucking deserved.
And did you read the reputation for the resume for this guy that he ended up in this incredibly powerful position?
No.
I want to say he was like a assistant helicopter pilot or something like that before this.
I know he served. I didn't look into how deeply he served, but that was just a fucking dumb, boneheaded thing to do. And he had to know the second he started spouting his mouth off. And I don't think he did. I think unfortunately this is a situation of poor leadership filtering down throughout the country, where people see, I don't want to name anybody, but they see a leader being bombastic and aggressive and blamey and firing from the hip. And you see leadership doing that and you think, oh, well, I guess I have a little bit of leeway to do that shit too. And nobody else does. Only one person seems to be able to get away with it. And that dude should have known the second he opened his mouth he was going to be writing a resignation letter within a week. And I hope that admiral gets his job back. I read yesterday that they're thinking about reinstating him.
I read that too.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like I'm having a lot of unpopular opinions today. I have to say, though, the military is kind of an autonomous organization. They do have the autonomy to run their own organization with oversight. And yes. I have respect for that. Jeff, you were in it. As someone who's outside, I understand that there's a need for that. And I do have an issue with the leader on one of the most precious resources in our military, which is an aircraft carrier, notifying the rest of the world that that aircraft carrier is essentially out of commission. There is a problem with doing that, you know? I don't know if, you know, getting him and taking him out because he was trying to save his own sailors is the right thing, but there's a problem with doing that.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of timelines there that aren't very clear, and I've read wildly differing reports on how that information was disseminated and who actually disseminated it and why. So I don't feel like I know the honest truth. But from everything that I've read, it just seemed like an act of desperation to get the world to listen to the fact that he had a ship full of sick people and nobody was taking it seriously. And he was trying to get anybody to pay attention and help him get those people help.
It did seem
is the impression that I got.
Yeah.
And that he was at his wit's end and was like, nobody's fucking listening to me. And I got a couple thousand soldiers here that I got, or seamen here that I have to take care of. And I'm at my wit's end, you know? Like, he is ultimately responsible for the lives of those people on that ship. And, you know, he broke protocol for sure. Or somebody on that boat did. I don't know that it's super clear who did. But, I mean, it was done with the desire of protecting human lives.
Mm-hmm. And it's boats are a huge risk for infectious diseases regardless. You know, JD went on a scuba trip last summer and a couple of the kids got a staph infection. It's a huge concern on a closed environment like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, in the early days, if you look at some of the posts from, Data is Beautiful on Reddit, when they show the growth of the disease, there were cruise ships that in the early days had so many more cases than entire countries, you know? And I'm sure the, Admiral was paying very close. Is he Admiral or Captain? Captain of the, what was his official position?
He's an Admiral, I believe.
He's an Admirable. Admirable Admiral.
I apologize to members of our the United States Navy for not understanding the command structure exactly, but I believe to command an aircraft carrier like that, you're an admiral or a rear admiral. I'm not sure how the hierarchy there.
Okay. Dude, I was also amazed when I was reading about this that, I mean, I knew aircraft carriers were massive. I also was curious, you know, when all this controversy was going on, like how much of a risk did he put the United States, you know, security at risk, you know, by telling the world that this aircraft carrier was out of commission. I didn't realize we have as many aircraft carriers as the rest of the world combined.
I think we have more than the rest of the world combined, don't we?
It's actually just under. Like Australia has two that put it over the top. But I think I want to say we have somewhere in the neighborhood of like 16 and there's 34 in the world. So we have an astronomical amount of aircraft carriers. And I also was looking at this, the Roosevelt in particular, they talked about how in response to the outbreak, they went down to a skeleton crew on the aircraft carrier, and the skeleton crew was 300 sailors, which is just, that's insane. It's like 3,000 people it takes to run an aircraft carrier. And I think most of the people were left there to run the nuclear reactor.
So we did Haunter, that's our ghost hunting show. For season two, we did an episode where we investigated the USS Hornet, which is a decommissioned aircraft carrier up in, I think, Alameda, California is where it was. And you talk about the size. I don't know how it's, I remember it being an Essex class aircraft carrier, but that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know if that means it's a big one or a little one, but I think because it's so old, it was on the smaller side. We were there for, I don't know, 10 or 12 hours. And, I think we saw, Gav, you were there. I think we saw 25% of that ship, maybe.
Oh, if that. And I remember that room, that, like when you first walk in and you got all the helicopters and other vehicles just sat in the big open giant room. That's one of the biggest rooms I've ever been in my life, like aside from convention center halls, and it floats.
I remember thinking that, because I was looking for like a basketball hoop or something, and I remember thinking I could throw a basketball as hard as I could and it wouldn't hit the ceiling.
Yeah, it makes it was so when you were talking tall. About the skeleton crew being 300 people, I wonder if one person could even pull that thing out of the dock. Like if you were just on your own in the boat, how long would it take you to get the ship up and running and moving? And if it even could be done by one person.
Dude, I watched Bravo's Below Deck, which is a shitty reality show about like luxury yachts. They have a crew of like 15 people and they can't get shit done at all. So that thing's the size of a really nice Cadillac. So no, I don't think one person could do it.
Yeah, I just looked up for reference the Roosevelt, right?
Right.
And their complement, the ship's company is 3,200 and the air wing is 2,480.
Wow. Wow. That is an enormous amount of people and a huge vessel. That is insane.
Have y'all ever been to the, it's a bit of an aside, but have y'all ever been to the subreddit Heavy Seas? Have you ever seen that?
No, never heard of that one.
I discovered it yesterday through a GIF that somebody posted on Reddit of an oil tanker like bobbing in the ocean dealing with waves.
I saw that GIF.
And that was crazy. And so I ended up in the comments, and from the comments, I got linked into this Heavy Seas, which you should definitely check out. But there was one yesterday of a battleship, like somebody filming on a cruiser or on an aircraft carrier, a battleship hitting waves. And the first 35% of that ship was totally underwater when it would hit a wave and then come back up and then go under again. It was the scariest, craziest thing I have ever seen.
So if you were just out on the deck, you were just gone?
You wouldn't be out on the deck. Not for very long.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah, no, you would be gone. It's like that thing was getting like maybe 30 feet underwater, it looked like, at the point. And it was shaking it off. Didn't give a fuck. The boat did not care, but it was like, it was fucking scary.
And it's like when you see it go underwater, your immediate concern is the boat's going to sink. But actually, the big danger, I think, is being a person inside of that massive, massive vehicle or ship, that vessel, and being thrown around. Like you can see some of the things when you're in heavy waves and cruise ships, and like the entire dining room is moving left to right, like just sliding back and forth.
Those videos.
There was
awesome.
One of those videos on that subreddit last night, and it's not funny, but it was funny because I was it turned those people into soup by the end of it. They were just like, it was just like a stew of chairs and tables and like arms and legs akimbo. And it must have been the most terrifying thing in the world to watch or to be a part of, but watching it, you know, online, it's fucking hilarious.
It's interesting when the walls and the ceiling and the floor are so rigid, everything else, like the people on the tables and shit, just become liquid in the big solid room.
Ay, ay, ay.
That's the same thing. Gav's always worried about that. You know, whenever we get in cars, Gav is way ahead of the curve of everyone has to buckle up, including the people in the back seat, you know, just because he'd done so many... But PSAs, Gav, in the UK for traffic safety?
It was some PSAs, but it was mainly just crash test filming. Just sitting there watching cars crash all day with dummies going flying everywhere. I was like, ugh.
I can't believe that wasn't a law here for so long. I feel like that's a fairly recent thing where they're like, oh yeah, the people in the back too. But it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching all the... I've talked about that before. The little accelerometers and all the heads. And you'd watch like an infant-sized dummy just fly around the car and kill everyone. Doesn't take a lot.
My mom was saying when I was a kid in the 70s, when I was a baby, like 75, 76, 77 maybe, She would make a nest on the passenger side floorboard of blankets and pillows and just lay me in there because there weren't car seats yet.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I would always tell my parents that I could remember a car we had when I was really young. I don't remember how old I was. I must have been 3 or 4 by the time they sold it. It was a Fiat. And they would always tell me, there's no way you remember that car. You were way too young. And I'd be like, no, I remember. And I could describe the air conditioner controls. Like, I know there were vertical switches that went this way and that. And, you know, the red and the blue for the hot and the cold air were over here. And my mom asked me, like, how is it that you remember that? And I said, well, I know because one time I went flying at the dashboard when you slammed at the brakes and I hit my face on it. So I remember, I remember very clearly what it looked like.
Oh, there's some kids that are frightened by monsters in the dark, but you've got this seared in memory of an air conditioning control unit.
How do I remember it? I've got high heat written backwards on my forehead, stamped into it for 40 years of my life. I remember every time I look in the fucking mirror.
You know what you don't see anymore that was kind of a thing for like late 80s, early 90s? Was automatic seatbelts that would like go forward on a little track. You remember those? I haven't seen anything like that in years. Or even there were some cars where the seatbelts were attached to the door so that when you opened it, they would just go out with the door and then you could get out of the car.
What are you talking about?
No, did anyone else remember that?
Yeah, I think people just realized that it was just another part on the car that was going to break. There's no like actual upside to having that other than it's like eventually in 5 years, you're going to have to pay to replace the fucking motor that operates your seatbelt. And you're going to have to pay it because you can't not have a working seatbelt.
Yeah.
Or the other thing that would happen was when you'd be in someone's car and you didn't realize it had them or you forgot, you would open the door and go to get out and the seatbelt would move forward and wrap around your neck. Like it would wrap around it from behind and choke you out. But yeah, it just seemed like a bad design. But I was looking up here. Volvo was the group that made the 3-point harness, the classic seatbelt now. And I remember the story that when they invented the seatbelt, they refused to patent it because they wanted to give it to the world for better vehicle safety, but I had a feeling that was more recent than it was. It was actually back in 1959. I don't think a Volvo was being that old of a company, but I guess they've been around a while.
Good for them.
Yeah, it was August 13th, 1959.
It's the year you were born. Hmm.
The year I was born, yeah.
Seatbelts weren't even mandatory at that point, I don't think.
Oh, no, Volvo's always been ahead of the curve on safety stuff, right?
Yeah, no, seatbelts weren't mandatory until later in the 60s, right, Gus? Because both of our cars, I think, didn't have them, and they weren't required to because they were built before the requirement.
I think my truck had them installed by the factory, but they were an option. Like, whoever originally bought that pickup had to pay for the seatbelt option, and that was in 64.
The upgrade.
Right.
So I'll get the Z-Bart coating and seatbelts, please.
That's interesting. So I went to go look up when was mandatory use of seatbelts mandated in Texas, because I remember that in my lifetime when it became a finable offense that you weren't wearing your seatbelt.
You used to be able to drink in the car. I remember that.
That was when I first moved to Texas. That was mid-80s. Yeah.